Okay, good afternoon, and I'm calling the House Labor and Commerce Committee for Monday, February 27th, to order. Remember, please silence your cell phones. And here on the committee, we have Representative Sullivan Leonard present, Representative Stutes present, Vice Chair Wool present, Representative Knopp present, Representative Josephson present, and myself, Chair Keto, present. We do have a quorum to conduct business, and I would like to make an announcement early this time because I seem to be forgetting in our haste to get out at the end of the day, but to thank our recording secretary, Caitlin Ellis. Thank you, Caitlin. And Alex Judiche over on the LIO moderator, and we have been joined by Representative Birch. The agenda today is consideration of House Bill 121, Occupational Health and Safety Civil Penalties, and House Bill 114, Boiler Pressure Vessel Inspection Reports. And what we will do is bring House Bill 121, Occupational Health and Safety Civil Penalties, before us, and bring my staff up, Ms. Carpinetti, if you can introduce the bill, your name and affiliation for the record, please.
Good afternoon. Thank you. For the record, Bianca Carpinetti, staff to Representative Keto. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. House Bill 121 is a Labor and Commerce Committee bill by request of the Department of Labor and Workforce Development. On January 20th, the department presented the concept behind this bill to the committee. At that time, the committee authorized the chair to draft a bill on behalf of the committee that brings the state of Alaska into compliance with federal OSHA standards, requirements. The bill before you is that result. House Bill 121 brings Alaska's Occupational Safety and Health State Plan into compliance with federal requirements. This ensures continued eligibility for federal grant funds, helping protect workers from workplace injuries, illness, and fatalities. Deborah Kelly from the Department of Labor and Workforce Development is here to present the bill in more detail. If there are no initial questions, I'll turn it over to Ms. Kelly.
Any initial questions? Doesn't look like it, so Ms. Kelly, you can come forward. Place your name and affiliation on the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Chairman, members of the committee. This is Deborah Kelly, Director of Labor Standards and Safety for the Department of Labor and Workforce Development. So maximum penalties and one minimum. There's five maximums, one minimum. I'll just say maximum from here on out. Maximum penalties for violations of Alaska's safety and health laws are currently set in statute. House Bill 121 will change that by requiring the Department of Labor and Workforce Development to set the maximums by regulation. And this bill will also limit those maximums for each penalty type to the corresponding maximum federal amount for the same penalty type. This is a bill for federal compliance, no more and no less. A little background, Alaska Occupational Safety and Health, or ACOSH, is Alaska's state plan. ACOSH receives federal grants and is responsible for the safety and health standards that protect almost all Alaskan workers. Alaska's program may develop and implement safety and health standards that fit Alaska's unique environment using input from Alaska's industries, workers, and from the public. ACOSH inspects all private and public workplaces in Alaska, with a few federal exceptions. If during the course of an inspection, an employer is found violating a safety or health standard, ACOSH may issue a citation to the employer along with penalties. A state plan such as ACOSH is required to be at least as effective as federal OSHA. So that brings us to the background for this bill. In 2015, Congress passed an act requiring many federal agencies to adjust penalties for inflation going back to 1990 and to continue to adjust those penalties along with the Consumer Price Index yearly from here on out. So OSHA complied and raised their penalties in July of last year. Alaska's requirement to be at least as effective includes maximum penalty amounts. And in your packet is the department's notification we received from the U.S. Assistant Secretary of Labor of our requirement to adjust our penalties to equal or higher than federal penalties. As of January 1st, 2017, we fell out of compliance with that requirement. A failure to come into compliance will eventually risk the over $2 million in federal grant funds ACOSH receives every year. This bill allows the department to set the current federal amount in regulation, no more and no less. Simply allows ACOSH to come in compliance with federal law and stay in compliance as penalties change from year to year.
Thank you, Ms. Kelly. Any questions? I have Representative Sullivan Leonard, yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've just been doing a little bit of research on this, and sorry, let me pull up my information I found. Just a review of the National Law Review, it looked like some of the increase that we're seeing would increase the penalty fees by 70 and 80%. That's something I'm very concerned with. And then also, can you answer for me, Ms. Kelly, through the chair, with regard to the CPI cost association with this? I don't know that they had the CPI in it prior, but it looks like there is an initiation of that. Can you clarify that for me, please?
Through the chair, Representative Sullivan Leonard, you're correct. The initial adjustment for inflation going back to 1990 is approximately 73% increase.
Right.
And then as far as the change that incorporates the CPI, I believe you are referring to the change of possibly the draft bill. Is that correct? The CPI is part of the Federal Civil Penalties Act that I referred to that Congress passed. So that was what initiated the requirement to tie these penalties to future CPI changes. And I don't think it was specified in the previous draft bill, and it is now.
Okay, again, through the chair, I am concerned with the amount that people will incur with regard to the 70% increase in penalties. And I'm hoping we can hear from industry how this may affect them. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And I guess I have one question regarding there are, I don't know how many states, but that states that have adopted enforcement of the occupational safety and health laws, Alaska being one of them. If we do not comply, do we risk losing our program to the Federal Occupational Safety and Health Administration?
Chairman Quito, that's correct. If we do not comply, one of the results could be losing the grant funds and the authorization and having federal OSHA then come in and take over, which one side effect, of course, would be the increase to the federal penalty amounts at that time as well.
So I guess as a follow-up for me, either way, we're looking at those penalties. And I guess another follow-up and a question from a conversation that we'd had earlier, does the penalty amount have the ability to be adjusted? And so if you could address that briefly.
Chairman Quito, that's correct. These penalties are maximums with the exception of the one minimum penalty. They are maximum penalties. They are not usually the amount that the employer actually pays. There are multiple reductions that are built into that maximum penalty. It starts out with that maximum and then it's reduced for business size, so small businesses are not paying as much in penalties as large businesses. It's reduced for other mitigating factors, and we also have the discretion to reduce during an informal conference with the employer if they come in and talk about their safety program or their plans to comply in the future.
Well, thank you, Ms. Kelly. Representative Knott.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To the chair, Ms. Kelly. So I was trying to study up the fiscal note, and it raised some questions. So it talks, I'm going to ad lib for just a minute before I get to my question. It talks about the legislation requiring the department to set the maximum minimum civil penalties for the OSHA program. Called the Federal Civil Penalties Inflation Adjustment Act Improvements. So I guess my question here, question and my problem maybe, is the fact that I'm curious about the retroactive measure to 1990. If we're setting a maximum assessment value for a violation, where's the retroactive portion come into that? Is that, I guess I struggle with the federal regulation stating we must go back to 1990 to adjust for CPI going forward to set our maximum penalty. I struggle with that just a little bit, because if the federal government has set a maximum penalty, they're looking to make sure we are at least meeting that. So it would be helpful for me to see their scale, so to speak. What is our maximum? Where are we currently at? And if we back up and adjust for CPI to 1990, where will that put us at? In that, and I struggled a little bit with the analysis on the fiscal notes, potential generated revenue, in the sense that, as you just stated, we get to bargain down for maximum going backwards. So I kind of wonder how, based on what, do we get them type of numbers, you know, in that fiscal study. So if you could help me out with them items, I would appreciate it. I think the Federal Civil Penalties Adjustment Act of 1990, that's or it hasn't been upgraded since then. So the new one, through the chair, I'd almost like to see that intent language. I can understand them wanting us to comply, but I need to know where we're at, I think, in comparison to what their maximum rates are. So thank you.
Through the chair, Representative Knopp. If I may start with the second part of your question, the fiscal note, where we actually got the numbers from, we went with the actual penalties paid by the employers. And the reason we went with that number is because it's a realistic amount of revenue we actually get, of course. And because our percent difference between the maximum and the actual amount we bring in from the employers stays roughly the same from year to year, so we can reasonably predict that if we're going to increase our maximums by 73%, that our actual revenue will increase by 73%. So that's where we get those numbers from, is the actual, we took our 2016 actual penalties collected from employers and extrapolated forward. And since we anticipate not implementing it until halfway into the next fiscal year, that's why the first year is half of the following years.
Okay.
And as far as the second part, the retroactive measures, I'm not fully sure I understand the question, but I did the last time around, and maybe I should have brought it this time. OSHA has a fact sheet showing exact numbers for what their maximums are increasing to. For example, serious violations, failure to abate violations, and violations of posting requirements are currently have a maximum of $7,000 per violation. The new maximum, the new federal maximum, is $12,471 per violation for those violation types. The more egregious willful or repeat violations are currently $70,000 per violation maximum, which increases to $124,709 per violation. And that's just taking the inflation adjustment from 2015 back to 1990, which comes out to that factor.
Follow up. So the numbers you just gave me was our new maximum penalties at the state level, but not the federal. What are the federal numbers going to be?
Up through the chair.
Do I have that correct?
Representative Knopp, these are the federal numbers I'm explaining right now. So if this legislation were to pass, this is what the state would follow suit with. Currently, the state numbers are those initial numbers I said, the $7,000 and the $70,000 respectively.
And so then the 70 through the chair, so the 73% increase will bring us into compliance based on current numbers at the state level up to what the federal has mandated. Is that how I understand that?
Through the chair, that's correct.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Representative Sullivan Leonard.
Yeah, I'm
going to pass. Okay. Anyone else have questions for Ms. Kelly or Ms. Carpinetti? Thank you for your testimony. We are going to open up public testimony. I don't have anyone signed up for public testimony. Is there anyone in the room that would like to testify on House Bill 121? Seeing no one in the room, we will hold public testimony open and bring this bill back before us for further consideration and action at a future meeting. So thank you for being here. With that, we will go ahead and move on to House Bill 114. So House Bill 114 is Boiler Pressure Vessel Inspection Reports. And we have invited testimony, individuals sitting at the table who will be testifying on this bill as well. Ms. Carbonetti, do you want to place your name and affiliation on the record and begin your statement?
Thank you. Again, for the record, Bianca Carbonetti, staff to Representative Quito. House Bill 114 is a Labor and Commerce Committee bill by request of the Department of Labor and Workforce Development. On January 20th, the department presented the concepts behind this bill to the committee. At that time, the committee authorized the chair to draft a bill on behalf of the committee that modifies filing requirements for boiler inspections. The bill before you is the result. House Bill 114 does two things. First, it establishes a $10 fee for each boiler and pressure vessel inspection report that is filed without using the available online system. Second, it reduces the time allowed to submit such reports from the current 30 days following an inspection to 15 days. Deborah Kelly from the Department of Labor and Workforce Development is here to present the bill in more detail. Barring any initial questions, I'll turn it over to Ms. Kelly.
Ms. Kelly.
For the record, Deborah Kelly, Division Director of Labor Standards and Safety for Department of Labor and Workforce Development. House Bill 114 institutes a $10 fee for each boiler or pressure vessel inspection report filed with the department in a manner other than using the department's online direct entry system. The bill also reduces the time allowed to file a report following a boiler or pressure vessel inspection from 30 days to 15 days. And for ease of speaking, I will refer to these in the future as boiler inspection reports. Boilers or pressure vessels in Alaska receive routine inspections varying from 2 to 5 year intervals. This is a public safety measure to prevent catastrophic failures. Boiler inspections may be done by State of Alaska inspectors or by private inspectors. The private inspectors generally work for insurance companies but may work for the device owners themselves. The mechanical inspection section of Labor Standards and Safety administers the inspection of these devices. Besides performing inspections, we also collect and review inspection reports and ensure that boiler owners are in compliance with state law. We use Jurisdiction Online, a software that allows inspectors to enter the reports directly from the field and also gives them access to information while they're in the field. Majority of inspectors are using this system, but some inspectors submit electronic documents, usually in PDF format, which require mechanical inspection staff to do manual data entry for. And mechanical inspection spends 350 to 400 man hours every year entering data on behalf of the companies who don't use our online system. This bill institutes a $10 fee for each report submitted without using Jurisdiction Online and deposits that fee into the building safety account. This will compensate the department for the data entry and the support provided to those inspectors. This bill also reduces the time allowed for submission of boiler inspection reports. The current 30-day time limit was set back when reports were mailed by the inspector in the field all the way to company headquarters and then mailed into the department. Now all reports come in electronically, whether through direct data entry or emailing PDFs, and most arrive within a week of inspection. Shortening the time to 15 days reflects current technology and practice and ensures that device owners are in compliance with the law in a more timely manner.
Thank you, Ms. Kelly. Questions, Representative Birch.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. How long are... $10 doesn't seem like much, depending on how long a report it is. I'm not familiar with the reports. Are they multi-page, page, 10 pages? I just don't have a sense of how big a task this is.
Through the chair, Representative Birch, I don't know how many pages the reports are, but what I do have is how much we estimate it takes per report to do the manual entry. And I've got it in here somewhere.
At 350 to 400 hours. Was that aggregate?
That's for 3,200 reports. So it's just a few minutes per report.
Oh,
but okay. It's a lot of reports every year. And there is also, in addition to that cost, the inspectors in the field who don't have access to jurisdiction online sometimes have to call us and ask us for device information that they otherwise could have gotten from that online database.
Okay, great. Well, thank you. Yeah, sounds like a good move to push it towards electronic reporting. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Sullivan Leonard.
Thank you, through the chair. Ms. Kelly, can you give me an idea of how many reports total or industries that actually file these reports? You've identified 3,200 reports filed per year that may be subject to this fee, so obviously we have, above and beyond that, those that are in compliance.
Through the chair, Representative Sullivan Leonard, per year we're seeing about 12,000 total, 11,000 to 12,000 total inspections per year. So that's not 12,000 devices, that's 12,000 inspections in a year, since most are in a 2 to 5 year inspection element. And then of those, 3,200 are being submitted on PDFs or other manners requiring data entry.
Okay, very good. Thanks.
Thank you. Any other questions? Seeing none, we'll open public testimony on House Bill 114. And is there no one online to testify? Is there anyone in the room that wants to testify on House Bill 114? Seeing none, we will leave public testimony open. And without anything more to come before the committee, we will be considering these bills again at a future meeting. And with that, we will adjourn House Labor and Commerce at 3:38. Thank you.